Dave, we got an interesting question from a Patreon backer, Abby, who asks, who will play Brad and Dave in the eventual movie? And I thought that would be a great place for us to open up with this week. Dave, who's going to play you in the biopic, The Comic Lab Story?
Well, first of all, is this a buddy prison break? Like, what is this movie about?
Yes, it is. You had me at prison.
It's you and I with a poster on the wall of our, we're using a metal spoon to slowly dig out a tunnel.
It's somewhere between Alcatraz and Stir Crazy.
So I have a funny story about Hollywood stars. I don't think that I look like him at all, but when Gloria and I first moved to LA, we would go to events, and it happened more than once. I drove a 1986 two-tone brown Buick Regal with a dent in the driver's side door when I moved to LA. A tremendous affordable piece of shit. Like it was basically my first big city car, but it was too big for a city. It was a Buick. I mean, it was just, you don't drive that around LA. Anyway, she and I went to go see a Steve Martin play at the Geffen, the one where he plays Picasso, you know, and And we park at the Geffen, we're getting out, and I think it was because we were at the Geffen, which is a famous playhouse in LA, that someone goes, oh my gosh, I saw you on Lifetime Movies last night. You did a great job. Beautiful work. Anyway, I don't want to be intrusive. Enjoy your night. I just wanted to let you know. And we were like, a Lifetime Movies? Who was on last night? And so we go into the play, we do the thing, and then like, I would say 4 months later, someone else at dinner comes up to us and goes, oh my God, they just replayed your movie on AMC last night. Oh, great, great work on it. It's just, the wife and I loved it. Wonderful work. And Gloria and I go, who do they think I am? Turns out both movies, it was Sean Austin from Rudy, if you remember Rudy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember that movie? I don't know if you remember that movie.
Yeah, sure, Rudy. I think Sean Austin, the Notre Dame guy.
Yes. Didn't he also go on to play Sam Gamgee in Lord of the Rings? I think he did.
That I couldn't confirm.
Anyway. Turns out that's the guy I guess we need to get to play me. So that's, we got that peg just because two to three people in Los Angeles came up to me independently. As I drove a piece, who would think that a Hollywood actor is driving an old, although to be fair, Will Forte still drives his old Toyota Corolla from like 1990. So that's possible. But who would play Brad Geiger in the eventual movie?
I've given this a lot of thought because I don't think I look like anybody famous, at least. In other words, nobody with a face like this would ever get famous. So I don't think I've got a famous look. But I was listening to the podcast, and I do have kind of like a vocal idiosyncrasy. I've got a little bit of a stutter, a little bit of a stammer. Sometimes I edit myself on the fly, and I'll do one of those. And I think if you had to have somebody play me, you'd have to resurrect Jack Lemmon, because Jack Lemmon can really deliver. Number one, he's very funny, and he's got that kind of rapid repurposing his words as they come out of his mouth. It's got to be somebody who can deliver the pathos of Brad Geiger and also be funny. You've got to go to a Jack Lemmon for something like that. So my answer, truthfully, is either Jack Lemmon or, you know, since he's passed on, Pauly Shore. Because I figure he needs the work.
So I like how when prompted to provide an actor, you're like, well, I mean, to really capture the pathos that is Brad Geiger, you need the best actor in comedy history. Yeah. And I'm like, wait, the only person who could play Brad Geiger is Jack Lemmon?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my, I mean, face it. It's not going to take a lightweight to pull this off. You're going to have to bring all of your actor's tools.
So let's see, who could play Brad Geiger? Who could play Brad? Let's see. How about one of the stars of 12 Angry Men? Let's bring in one of the greatest stars of American cinema.
Just go through Glengarry Glenn Ross from top to bottom and see who's still alive and who's available.
Well, those actors are only for closers, Brad. Those actors are only for closers. Yeah. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics, I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm Jack Lemmon, the star of 12 Angry Men and of, I'm trying to think of other movies that he was in. I can't. Oh, Glengarry Glenn Ross. You literally just said it. No.
And Grumpy Old Men, The Odd Couple.
Wait. Was he in 12 Angry Men and Grumpy Old Men?
Oh, you know what? He was definitely in Grumpy Old Men.
Holy guacamole. That's funny that he's in Woody. That caught me as funny. Anyway, I'm Brad's friend, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And we have something exciting to talk about. Fresh on the heels of one of Brad's greatest names that he ever came up with, Comic Lab Cash Grab, which we just delighted in. We have a new thing that we're trying out in the months ahead, starting this week. It's called Comic Lab Live Gab. And for folks that join us over at the $10 level at patreon.com/comiclab, you can watch the live stream of every week's show. Including all the gaffes and the hiccups and the mistakes that get edited out, and the time that Brad mistakenly compares himself to Jack Lemmon. We'll edit that out later. So
that'll be fixed in post.
That'll be fixed in post, and it'll be compared to Herman Munster. We'll know to fix that later. Or not Herman Munster, the grandpa. Grandpa would
Fred
be better.
Grandpa. Oh gosh, I should know that. Al Lewis, Grandpa Al Lewis.
Mind blown. You know what actor played the grandpa on the Munsters?
I loved that actor. Al Lewis is a national treasure.
Wasn't he an old vaudevillian that eventually made his way into Hollywood and then TV?
Yeah. Absolutely. That was his roots. And a very early pairing with Fred Gwynne on Car 54, Where Are You?
Right. Oh, my God. I forgot about. Jeez, look at you knowing all about Lewis's career. Who
I had nothing. Listen, when I was a teenager, I wasn't dating much. I had nothing to do but watch Nick at Night.
Not a lot to do in Bad Axe, Michigan, aside from ice fishing during the winter. You're like,
That's right.
I'm going to review the career of Al Lewis. That's what I'll do. So anyway, Comic Lab Live Gab, what it'll be is every week we record the show at a fixed time. And now if you join us at the $10 level, you can watch and enjoy and chat as the show goes live. And as we said, the fun part actually is catching the gaffes and the mess ups and that I think will be half the fun.
The Patreon backers that showed up today to help us test had a wonderful view right up my nose as we were starting.
Now, way to sell it, Brad Geiger Marketing 101.
That's an exclusive. You don't get anywhere else.
That's an exclusive, yeah.
Yeah,
That's the kind of thing that people, I think, would pay good money for on the internet is...
Absolutely.
All nostril, all the time.
To their credit, as longtime Comic Lab listeners, the first thing they mentioned was that my nostrils looked a little dry.
Well, listen, as my longstanding advice for conventions holds true, you gotta moisten those nostrils, Brad. Moisten those nostrils.
That's right.
To survive a Comic-Con.
That's the advice I was getting.
If the CDC is ever listening to our podcast and I'm like, here's how you fight COVID, and you're like in the background going, no, don't listen to Dave Kellett.
Well, listen, if you're intrigued by that, the other nice thing is that you get to listen to the show as it happens live because right now we've got about a 4-week buffer. The shows we record won't come out to the public until another 4 weeks. So when we're talking about things that are of the moment and happening right now, as we're going to do later on this show, you're going to get first crack at it. And I think that's useful, too. So that's going to become a Patreon tier in June. We're going to be testing it out all through April and May. And in June, that's going to become something that you can treat yourself to as a Patreon exclusive.
And one fun thing, just as a little addendum, you can see right up hand personal level, Brad and my tremendous taste in fashion by watching the show live.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to see two guys that both happen to pick a black t-shirt today, then by God, have you come to the right place? This is the kind of thing you want to get in on.
I'm this close to buy. And for some reason, Dave, we mentioned this. You and I are both getting ads on Instagram and social media for t-shirts that are specially tailored for the dad bod.
Yes.
And I don't know how it is they identified me, but I'm this close to getting one of those t-shirts. That guy looks really good.
I figured out how Instagram knows that I should get targeted for a dad bod stuff. It's like, yeah. I oddly linger over ads for like Honda Odyssey minivans, and I'm strongly interested in dinosaurs. They're like, that's a dad. Send him ads for dad bod shirts. So I'm just getting all the dad bod t-shirts.
Yeah. He's like, he's the one guy the algorithm identifies to go swimsuit model. Ooh, Entenmann's.
Oh, the variety pack on the chocolates. Why, I think I'll click into that. Thank you very much. Yes.
Oh, that was my first introduction to Philadelphia. The lady that was babysitting Alex when he was a baby, she was in the neighborhood. That's what she was, a neighborhood lady that just raised everybody's kids. That was her thing. She was a babysitter. Great, fantastic lady. I loved her. But we were new to the neighborhood, and so I'm like, I'm looking for a place where I can maybe get some fresh baked goods, you know, something to kind of surprise my wife with, maybe some fresh don't. She says, oh, I know exactly how to get fresh baked goods right here in our neighborhood. She says, I know exactly when the Entenmann's truck pulls up. And I said, that's not fresh baked. She says, no, it's right off the truck. she was so proud. Right off the truck, you can get those coffee crumb cakes. It's the best. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll keep that in mind.
they're no more than 2 days from the factory. So they're right. They're bread. They're, it's like, yeah, they're right off the stove. You know, that's
they're
amazing.
They're not sitting on the shelf. They're right off the truck.
So anyway, Comic Lab Live Gab, to finish that off, you can join us over at the $10 level, patreon.com/comiclab. And also, yeah, what's fun about it is you can try it out. Try it out for a month. Check out the, yeah, live show. You can always bump back down. Won't hurt our feelings, but try it out. See, yeah, I think you'll agree that it's pretty fun. And Brad, what is our first topic for this week?
First topic for the week comes in from one of our backers with one of our favorite names. Adonis has written. Dave, Adonis wrote in. And Adonis says, and I got to read this in my Adonis voice, I was wondering if you guys have ever thought of your stories in a different medium, such as in a movie, TV show, musical, etc. I sometimes make the mistake of thinking of the comic I slowly work on as anime, but an impactful soundtrack is something I do not have access to in a comic. Interested to hear your thoughts. My best, Adonis.
I like your Adonis, by the way. I listen.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Your voice, Brad, this wedding ring can come right off Brad Geiger with that voice.
So you now this has a, you got to kind of put yourself in a weird spot here to understand, I think, what he's talking about. As he's coming, as he's brainstorming his comic, he's hearing it acted out. He's hearing, instead of writing the words, the characters are delivering the words, and there's maybe sound effects, and yeah, he's even got a soundtrack to his comic.
Right, right.
And he says, is this you too? Is this something everybody does? And I guess that's my first question to you, Dave. Do you, when you're writing down and brainstorming your comic, are you envisioning it in real time?
So this is an interesting question because I have a couple different layers I want to hit on with this. One is,
yeah,
I don't know day to day or week to week that I do this, but mm-hmm, I will say every 12 months or so with Drive, I will stop and think like, how will I eventually translate this if I ever pitch this as a movie? Like, how do I sell this arc that's not in comics form that would be in script form? How would I sell that?
Yeah.
So that, but I think that's different than what Adonis is doing, because I will say, Adonis, watching my wife up close who writes for TV, I know that she finds an actor in her mind and then, yeah, writes specifically to that actor, even before she's hired them. So let's say that actress or actor becomes unavailable when they eventually come time. But it was helpful for my wife in the process of writing to write in their voice to that actor, to that style of acting. And mm-hmm, and so I can see how a lot of comic artists do the same. And I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with it, Brad. Wouldn't you say, like, it's kind of one of those whatever toolbox you can use to get you to where the final product is produced, so be it. What are your thoughts? Do you do this, Brad? Do you ideate? I know you do. So go ahead and talk about it.
I do. And it leads me down it leads me down to trouble every time. Yeah, I do it, and I've got to make myself stop doing it because of so many reasons. Number one, in my mind, there's a laugh track. Okay. So everything that I say is hysterical. But unfortunately, everything I write is not hysterical. So I've got a very easy audience inside my head. And I get to that punchline that's poorly written and the laugh track goes off and I'm like, ah, Geiger, you hit gold again. Stop digging.
I'm imagining this like a little guy. Remember the little guy in Men in Black that was powering the body, but he was a tiny little alien in the head?
Yeah.
I'm imagining that guy sitting in your head, just hitting a button going, laugh track, laugh track.
Do you know how you said a few episodes ago that you've always got kind of a song in your head and you're always doop, 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 doop.
Yeah.
I've got a laugh track.
No, genuinely, wait, I was joking, but you genuinely do?
Not all the time, but at certain times, if I say something I think is funny, I'll humor myself with a laugh track. Because a lot of times it's the only laughs I'm getting. It ain't my wife.
it's around the dinner table, it's just the slow, like, cutting and fork hitting the plate as everyone's eating dinner. In the meantime, Brad's laugh track running through his head.
I'm waiting for the applause break so I can say my next line. But it's also problematic. And as soon as I'm going to say this, you're going to understand what I mean. Spoken comedy or spoken dialogue is 100% different than written and read dialogue.
Amen.
So what happens is a lot of times you can get a punchline that if somebody said it out loud is brilliant, but when you write it, it's unintelligible, right? And that happens with wordplay quite a bit, right?
Absolutely.
The spoken word delivers it, or it might be just the reverse, right? That it doesn't work so well in spoken word. And then you miss the opportunity to put it into print. And what we're doing is a quiet medium. It is something that's read and delivered through that process. And it's visual. Sometimes the very look of the word or the look of the word balloon contributes to that. So I do that. I do what Adonis is talking about all the time. And I gotta stop myself because it very often leads me. It's just a simple thing. If I'm ideating something that has a laugh track and sound effects and spoken word delivery, none of those three things has anything to do with my comic. And so I do this thing that Adonis does, and I got to stop myself because it leads me to bad decision-making.
Yeah. Well, one thing to talk about is that the difference between a passive and an active media. And TV and film are passive medias in the sense that you are not a co-conspirator in that art being received in terms of as an audience member, right? When you're watching TV, when you're watching a film, you are sitting there and passively receiving it as it is coming at you, right? With video games or with comics or with novels or with poetry, it is a more active medium because you are actively participating in the reception of that art. And so to just further Brad's point, the brain handles that differently because especially with like novel making, you are creating the images in your head. You are creating an image of those faces, of the places that they go, of the vehicles that they ride in, right? And with comics, you are also actively coming up with what's happening between pages, between panels, between time skips, right? That sort of thing. And so you are both actively reading, but also actively filling in the gaps of like, you know, an artist can choose the moments in time that they draw, but you as a reader are actively filling in. And so what I think to further Brad's point, there is a tiny danger in that by ideating in a different media, you write wrong for the media that you're working in. Does that make sense, Brad?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So I think it's fun and helpful. And actually, Adonis, I think that it is incredibly helpful when there's a writer's block to say, you know, we've said this before, like sometimes write as, instead of writing as you, write as Neil Gaiman or write as, Douglas Adams. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of names, right? Like you can temporarily break your writer's block by trying to write, how would XYZ write their way out of this corner? And you can also do that by ideating another media. So you can say like, I don't know how to finish this page. I don't know how to change this story block transition to the next one. And then you can go, well, how would TV do it? How would a video game do it? Mm-hmm. How would a movie do it? How would a long form poem do it? And sometimes that is a helpful way to change the sort of fixed point that you're in and say, I see there's 19 different options on how to transition out of that. Don't you think, Brad?
Yep. And as long as all of that, I co-sign 100%. But when you get to the end result and you're putting it down on your screen or on your page, just remember to give it one last look to make sure that it works in the medium you're working in. That's you know what I mean? Everything you said, I do too. Like I do everything you just said. But in that last step, you got to make sure that you haven't translated something that isn't going to work on a comic. Yeah. And as long as you do that, I think you're going to be safe.
And I think, Adonis, though, to put a button on it, I think it's a totally valid way to do it. And I think, like you, Brad, and I would say, you do recognize when you run up against a wall. In your case, you're recognizing, like, I don't have access to or use of a soundtrack. Like, that is immensely helpful within, like, I think you had talked about anime. Like, Naruto can use music to emphasize a point. You can't, in your comic, use the music to emphasize a point. So what we have to do is what Brad said. You have to visually represent what the mood is, both in the way the text is presented, the way the composition of the panels presented, the beat of the moments, and how timely it is. And so I think a valid tool, but as Brad said, just make sure that in the final product, that you're writing for comics, not for anime.
Absolutely.
So, Brad, switching topics, I wanted to ask you, because I know you had a lot of thoughts on it, Artful, the new social media platform specifically for artists. For those that are not familiar with it, it's spelled Artfol, which I guess is short for Artfolio. It's a little bit of a chewy word in the sense that full is not a fun syllable to end on.
But
that's just me critiquing names. Anyway, so Artful is a social media platform designed for artists to share with mainly other artists. And Brad, I wanted to get your thoughts on it because I know you have worked up a head of steam about Artful. How does the concept land with you, and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm not optimistic for it myself, and I think it's something that it is worth talking about, and that is they are positioning themselves as social media for artists. And so, of course, you know, I like to kind of keep my finger on the pulse of this kind of stuff. So I immediately signed up for an account so that I could at least talk about it intelligently on the show later on if somebody brought it up. And I started posting some stuff and immediately kind of saw what was going on there. And it was very clear, very quickly, that I don't give this real optimistic chances of success. And I'll tell you why. Okay. Because this is exactly like when somebody is first starting to learn to promote their comic online. The first rookie mistake they make is going and finding a Facebook group, for example, of web cartoonists. And they go to the only people who are part of this group are other web cartoonists. And they'll immediately post, hey, check out my comic, No Shoes for Tuesday, bop a bop a bop. And everybody kind of rolls their eyes because it's the 10th time that's happened today, let alone this week. And it's like all that stuff, even that we said way back in 2008 for the How to Make Webcomics book, where we said, hey, we applied it to message boards. It's like, hey, go in, become part of the community, become part of the conversation, and then you'll become known if you're going to do something like that. But even more than that, you don't promote to other cartoonists. Mm-hmm. It might be okay to network online. I'm totally down with that. But you don't promote to other cartoonists unless you're doing a comic about cartoonists, in which case that's your audience and you should do it. But you shouldn't promote to cartoonists. Cartoonists, by the way, make, for the most part, lousy readers because they're busy trying to get you to read their stuff. They don't want
to. They also make lousy supporters, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like,
if they make okay readers, they're not going to crack that wallet as much as you would hope, you know?
Yeah, Comic Lab listeners excluded from that, of course, but that's a totally different thing. But they're not going to be good for engagement. They're not going to be good if you're trying to build a readership. They're just not good for that. That's not what they're there for. They're trying to do the same thing. They got their own paddles in the water. They're trying to do their own thing. They're not interested in becoming a supporter of your thing. And that's what Artful is social media for artists. So you post your stuff, you can't get any engagement because everybody else there is posting their stuff hoping for engagement. It's totally unilateral.
Well, can I just do a tiny pause and do a point counterpoint with what you said, which is I would argue that I largely agree with what you're saying. 95% do I agree with what you're saying. But I want to underline that I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with going to, say, those Facebook pages or Facebook groups for cartoonists. Or I honestly don't think that there's anything wrong in seeking out peers that are starting around the same time that you're starting, because you come up together. Brad, that's what we did. If you're honest about it, that's what we did.
No, I disagree. Yes. 100%. I disagree. All right. Because when you go and you post, hey, check out my comic, Two Shoes for Tuesday, you're not trying to engage other artists. I'll tell you what you're talking about. What you're talking about is, hey, everybody, I'm thinking about updating this comic and I'm not sure which pencil to use. Could you give me some thoughts on that? That's
a different post.
That's a different guy. This guy just came in and said, hey, read my comic and out.
Yes.
What you're talking about is what I referenced us talking about in How to Make Webcomics. Go to and find this group and become a member of the group. That's what you're talking about. And I'm for that 100%.
Yes. I realize now, only by clarifying you, and you're right to do it, that I was talking about shop talk more than I was talking about the sharing of the comic itself. And you're right. That's a good clarification and a good point. I guess what I was trying to say that I don't want to put the kibosh on anyone going out to seek peers that are starting around the same time that they are.
Right.
Because I actually see tremendous value in saying, like, hey, let's, a rising tide can lift all boats. Let's help one another up. And, you know, we'll sort of bootstrap this together. Mm-hmm. I find value for a lot of cartoonists in doing that. But you're saying that is different than the promotion of the comic, and I agree with that. Yep. So I will rescind my complaint, and now I am fully in agreement with Brad Geiger.
And by the way, Dave, that's why we have the Comic Lab Discord service, because that's exactly what happens there. And
right,
if you notice, when you go to the Discord server, there is the main chat, and then there's self-promotion. It's a completely different channel, keeps all of that stuff off to the side, because I know you're going to want to do it. You're not going to be able to stop yourself. You got to have that channel. So I put it there. It's off to the side. If somebody wants to look at that channel, they can. But for the most part, that leaves that Comic Lab main channel for the stuff that Dave's talking about.
Yeah,
where it's like, yeah, I want some info share. I want some advice.
Well, let me ask you this, Brad, because I would like Brad Geiger forecasting here. What do you think happens to Artful 2 years from now, 3 years from now? Does it still exist?
Same thing that happened to Mammoth. Same thing that's happening to Pillow Fort. I think it just kind of settles to the bottom of the tank. I don't think my forecast is in a year we're gonna not remember what Artful was.
Well, let me ask you for clarity. How would you describe what DeviantArt was when DeviantArt was at its heyday? DeviantArt is still clicking for some people.
Yeah.
But there was a heyday for DeviantArt. How would you describe what DeviantArt was at its heyday that's different than Artful?
It was an early form of what would become social media, but the main words in that sentence you just used are in its day. It got its stronghold in a completely different web publishing environment. And most of the power that it's got today is because of those roots that it put down in the 2000s.
Well, yeah, I'd also posit that DeviantArt got its start at a point in the web where it was fairly expensive to host and display a lot of images.
Yeah.
And so for young 19, 20, 23-year-old artists, it was a cheap way to show their folio and share their work at a time when Twitter and Instagram maybe weren't up, you know, flying off the shelves popular yet. So
right.
You're right. You're right that that's a different time than now.
And by the way, I totally understand that there are some people that do commissions on DeviantArt. They do they do a very good business doing commissions on DeviantArt. The problem that I've got with that is I'm not doing this to necessarily build commissions. I'm doing this to build a readership for a comic. That's a completely different ball game. And I don't know that a place like DeviantArt is as good for something like that. And it brings me to my final point with this whole thing. The problem with Artful is it's saying, you know, and of course it's saying that it doesn't use an algorithm, that it's a lot more truer. And I get that. I totally get that. The problem is an art social media for artists is a problem for all the reasons I just listed. And if you're looking for a social media that really rewards artists, take a look at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, the top three. Anybody that posts on any of those social media will already tell you that the posts that get the most attention are posts with images or posts with videos. In other words, those are social media that encourage and reward artists.
I just thought of a funny visual metaphor, and I want to see if this triggers with you. Artful a little bit like, you know, when you go to a seafood restaurant and there's the large 100-gallon tank off to the side and it's all lobsters, right? And is artful like a new lobster jumping into that tank and going, hey, guys, hey, anybody want to go for a swim? Let's figure out a way that we can all go swimming together. And like, it's a lot of motion in that, but nothing's really happening because it's all just in this tank just for lobsters, four lobsters. And I guess, by the way, they're also going to be eaten. So how does that break apart my metaphor?
Hey, everybody, I've got some new ideas for lobstering over here. I got this thing. Maybe we can do something with our claws. What do you think? And the other lobsters are over there going, yeah, we get it. We understand.
Oh, he's the new guy posting about his new claw thing. All right.
Here we go. We got to hear about this guy again. Great. Wonderful.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, you know, Dave, what I saw on Twitter just the other week is something that brought back memories to me, and I had never thought about it for a topic for the show. And there it was staring me in the face. And it's like, oh gosh, we got to talk about this. The tweet was, hey, I'm thinking about hosting some web comics on my site. What would you think if I used my site to host web comics? Would you want me to do that? And that made me think about the topic of private web comic hosts. In other words, somebody that's got either a site or a server or a server farm that they use to do hosting for individual people for their web comics and so forth. And I thought about that as a topic and the fact that we should probably warn anybody that's thinking about getting involved in this in the pitfalls.
Well, yeah, and it's a good launching off point because Brad and I have a couple times got our fingers singed by doing similar type arrangements in our career. Just a reminder, it's been 20 years, so Brad and I have made all sorts of mistakes, and the benefit that we try to do with the show is have you learn and avoid the mistakes that we made. And at differing times, Brad and I have associated ourselves with either individuals hosting things or individuals running a this or that, or a small distribution company run by somebody out of their garage, or a small hosting company or a small t-shirt company. The idea being an individual who's like, I'm going to be helpful, and I'm jumping in to help your company or your comic, right? And almost every time, Brad, I think it has ended badly or at least uncomfortably for us, where having been held together by spit and baling wire for most of the time anyway, when it does eventually fall apart, we have to scramble to fix it, wouldn't you say?
Oh, and that's the part I want to warn people about, especially since, and we've got to put this right up at the top, it has never been an issue of a malicious person. It has never been something that the person who has been doing the hosting turns out to be evil or a vampire or a monster or turned out to have, in the cases at least I'm thinking of, I don't think I can think of any cases where the person turned out to be, you know, like a cruel or evil or a bad person.
But just as a point of introduction, we have known people in very similar situations that hooked themselves up with people who did turn out to be malevolent.
Yes.
In their, so yeah. Even though we were either lucky or had the good sense enough to hook up with people that were trustworthy, I just want to underline that that is also a possibility, that you could hook up with someone who has malevolent intent. But thankfully, Brad and I found good people. But then what happened, Brad? I'm sorry.
What happens is eventually these people get a life. And the problem is running like a server farm or running all this stuff. And in some cases, one of the people I'm thinking of had come up with an entire CMS, an entire content management system that we could publish with, and which is great. The only problem is that requires constant updating. It requires bugs that need to be fixed when different things happen in technology. It requires, I want to be able to do X, Y, Z. Now this person has got to code that over the weekend or whatever. And eventually they either just say, hey, listen, folks, I'm moving on. You've got to come up with other solutions. Or which is, by the way, the best case scenario. Hey, folks, I'm moving on. You've got 2 months to work things out. Here's what you need to do, blah, blah, blah. Right. Oh, chef's kiss. That's that. Of all the scenarios, that's the best.
That's happened to us twice, right? Where they gave us notice, but it was a scramble, you know?
Oh, it was still like agita. It was still stress, but it was manageable. The worst case scenario is when they just slowly disappear like a ghost. Right. And you send an email and it doesn't come back for 2 or 3 weeks, but they're still there, still want to help you. Still Team Geiger. Yes, indeed. But then the next thing takes 4 weeks to resolve. And slowly they just kind of fade into the background. And you're going, I'm still here. I'm still on this.
I'm still here. Over here.
But and that's the worst case scenario. But here's the deal. On one side, it's free in most cases. It's free hosting, and it's hard to say no to free hosting. Well, back in the day, it was hard to say no to free hosting. These days, it's kind of cheap. But on one hand, you're like, oh, geez, that's free. On the other hand, in every case, I want this things in my business. I want it to be a moneyed transaction. I want to pay you money for the thing, because then, number one, you've got a reason to keep going. You've got a reason to stay good. You've got a reason to keep involved in it. And also, I can say, hey, I don't have to feel bad. If it's not a moneyed transaction, then I'm asking for somebody to do me a favor.
Right.
Hey, could you do this coding thing for me? I'm really hoping you could. If it's a money transaction, I'm a paying customer. Get moving.
What you don't want is your comics business to become the equivalent of having to call your cousin to ask if you can borrow their truck for a move, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what it becomes when you're having somebody like, I'll host your comic. Starts off with the best of intention. Eventually, you're calling your cousin asking to borrow the truck to move your apartment. You know, like it's just, you get into a situation where all you're doing is asking. There's no quid pro quo, and they are either moving on with new kids or a new job or a new location or new interests in their life. And they're like, oh, I did promise this to Brad Geiger. All right, I'll get to it, Brad. And then that thing stretches out 3 or 4 weeks until they eventually get to it. Don't you think?
When you call your cousin to ask for him to let you borrow the truck for a move, and Saturday morning rolls around and he's not there, you call him up and you say, hey, you were supposed to help me move. And he goes, oh, geez, I'm sorry about that. How about tomorrow? Or how about I get there in 5 hours? Or how about next weekend? All of which are fair answers from his standpoint. When you rent a van or a truck from U-Haul and they don't have that truck ready for you Saturday morning, you can raise hell. You can make sure that they've got a truck over there for you. That's a money transaction. And I'm sorry, you need that. You need that money transaction when you're doing business. You can't rely on favors.
Yeah. I just to underline that point, I have come to see that there are so many things in my business, and it is a business, let's remember, that if I'm not paying for it, then it has the potential down the road to just get complicated. Even if even if everyone has good intentions, it's all friendship and handshakes, it just gets complicated if you're not paying for it. And so I just to underline that, I think we can end it there, that it's not worth it in the long run to take the goodwill of a good, benevolent person who is saying, I will host your comic. Down the line, that will come to bite you in the butt. And maybe, by the way, you're making that a calculation, like I can at least get a year of this, and then by then I will have built myself up. Okay, yes, maybe, if you want to roll the dice with that, but just know from Brad and I's experience, it will eventually come to bite you in the butt, and just know that that's coming. And now, Brad, before we switch topics, you used one of my favorite words a minute ago, and I just want to draw attention to it. You said agita, which no one ever says. No one ever says the word agita. But here's what's funny about agita and the evolution of language. Agitated, everyone uses. Everyone uses agitated, right?
Yep.
Like, that's a super common word in English. But agita was the original word. Agitated was the modified version of agita. And
really?
We all use agitated, and no one uses agita. And agita's over there going like, what the hell's wrong with me? I'm the original version.
Agita had a really wonderful resurgence of popularity in the 1990s because they used it on The Sopranos all the time. It's kind of like it's kind of like you hear it in South Philly quite a bit. It says, I think it's related to an Italian slang, or at least that's my understanding.
Well, that's a very Italian neighborhood, isn't it, South Philly?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's like that's where the Italian market is, where Rocky ran through back in the 1970s. And it doesn't look too different from when he was running through in the
70s.
Yeah. But yeah, you'll hear people, hey, you're giving me agita. Don't give me this agita. It had a big resurgence. And then after The Sopranos went off the air, I don't think anybody used it after that.
Anyway, I don't know why. It caught my eye that agitated, everyone's using. And meanwhile, Agis is over there with like a new suit on going, I'm still a good word. No one uses me anymore.
I'm smelling a Sheldon comic coming up.
Yeah, I know. That's next week. All right. So, Brad, our next question comes in from Dave Lerner over at patreon.com/comiclab, which, just as a reminder, you can sign up at the $10 level for Comic Lab Live Gab starting in June. All right. Anyway, Dave writes, you've mentioned the importance of composing a panel, but I don't think you've ever done a deep dive on it. What is panel composition? Do you have equal weight on both sides? What does that even mean? How do you get readers to see what you want them to see? What if you have multiple objects you want seen in a certain order? What do word balloons do to composition? And numerous other questions I don't even know I should ask. Thank you for the podcast. Worth every penny and then some. Thank you, Dave. That's very kind words. Brad, I have a bajillion thoughts on this. Do you want to start this off or shall I jump in?
You know what? You're doing such a good job. Take it and run.
That's like a man who is passing the buck right there. That's what spoken like a man who wants nothing to do with this question. Spoken like a man who's feeling agita that I even asked it of him. That's what. All right.
No, you got a whole head of steam. I don't want to get in your way.
So, Dave, this is a tricky one to answer on a audio podcast because it's a very visually oriented question, obviously. But yeah. I think I will try to do my best in it, which is to say, go read a book on composition. No. All right. So, here is the kicker, Dave, is that in comics is a marriage of word and picture, right? And
yeah.
For a lot of artists, they put the incorrect weight that the image has to carry the heavy load, when in fact it is a marriage between word and mm-hmm. picture. And in a lot of senses, sometimes the eyes only dart down to the art, but they follow the writing, but they only mm-hmm. dart down to the art, right? So I want to start with composition by saying this first, is that once you have decided on a consistent font and a consistent font size for your comic, let's say it's, Comic Craft size 12, right? It doesn't matter what the font is. And when you know the size of your font and you know you need to have 10 words in this panel, that drives how much space is going to be taken up by words, right? So you lay out the text first. Mm-hmm. Then once you have the text laid out, you know how much you have left to work with. Ideally, it's 2/3 or more of the panel is now left for art, right? And then the big takeaway is, what kind of message do you want to have? Is it an image that reinforces what's being said in the text? Is it an image that's oppositional? Is it an image that's ironic? All of that can be used in marriage with Wally Wood's 22 Panels That Work. And I know that's a big dodge to point you towards that. But just Google Wally Wood's 22 Panels That Work. And frankly, it'll give you a better summary than I could in vocal patterns to say, here's the different ways that you can use visuals to lay out a pattern. But I want to start with that idea with composition, that you cannot underemphasize how much the text drives what you have available to you in that panel for composition. Brad, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, because driving off of what you just said, one of the most important compositional elements in comics that you have to understand is the importance of the Z, all right? You've got to respect the Z. And what I mean by that is readers read in a Z formation. They start at the upper left-hand corner, they read across, and then they go diagonally back down to the left, and then they read across, just like you read text in the English language. Start at the left, go across, diagonal down, go to the right, right, left, right, left, right. In a Z formation, the biggest mistakes that we see, particularly in word balloons, happen when you don't respect the Z. And I'll tell you exactly what I mean. You've got to understand that not only do readers read in a Z, but each word balloon has its own force of gravity. Almost like a planet, okay? Every word balloon has gravity. So very often, you'll see somebody putting a word balloon in the upper left and the upper right, and then they'll put one word lower in the middle, okay? And maybe a little bit to the left. This is where it's hard to do verbally, but think of that upper left, upper right, and then one that's lower and towards the middle. That's an impossible composition to read correctly because you're not necessarily going to go straight across to the left, but because that upper left-hand balloon has its own sense of gravity and is going to pull that lower balloon over to it. And in that case, you're going to go from the upper left to the middle one and then back up instead of left, right, down. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm-hmm. It had its own sense of gravity. And it pulled you away from the Z. You've got to respect each of those word balloons, a force of gravity, okay? So your best bet, number one, if you're writing a panel that has that many balloons in it, your first go-to is I need to edit.
Yeah.
Get those balloons down. But okay, let's say that you, for whatever reason, you're doing it this way. And I do a lot of multi-balloon panels myself. Chopping up one phrase into a couple balloons to give myself a sense of pause there. So I get where you're coming from. But your main objective as you're laying out that composition is to respect the Z. Make sure that they read from the upper left, across to the right, diagonal down to the left, across to the right. And if you stick to that, And keep those word balloons nice and close to each other so that your reader doesn't have to guess, should I go across or should I go to this one down here? Mm-hmm. To make sure your reader never has to guess. If you can keep your balloons nice and tight to the Z up there, then it's just a question of filling in that illustration. And then it's a question of, like Dave says, Wally Wood's 22 panels, and also just your own sense of aesthetics. What looks good in that panel? Aesthetics is something that you've got to develop for yourself. I can't tell you what your aesthetic is. It's going to come to you from you making decisions over and over and over again, watching other cartoonists make similar decisions, seeing how you liked how some of their decisions worked out, how you didn't like some of your own as they worked out, and finding not necessarily a visual balance, but a mental balance in, okay, I've been down this road before. I know if I draw this one character too big, I'm not going to have enough room to really give my other character enough visual space. Mm-hmm. Aesthetic and developing your aesthetic is something that's going to come over time. And just as you expose yourself to more work and do more work yourself and solve those problems in real time, it's something that nobody can sit there and tell you, okay, this is your aesthetic. It's something you've got to develop over time.
Right. And I think one of the reasons why I pointed you to Wally Wood's 22 Panels That Work is this is legitimately one of those topics where it's just easier to learn it from a visual medium than it is from a spoken medium. And so take a page from that. Maybe check out the DC and Marvel, how they make their, what are those titles, Brad? DC Comics, how to make DC Comics or whatever.
They both got a how-to guide that's very good.
And another one to check out from the library, Scott McCloud, Making Comics. I think it's his third book in that series. But anyway, just to give you a summary, Dave, one of the reasons why comic strips often become two talking heads is that it is the simplest composition that consistently works. They are both on the same weight. They're both on the same eye line. They're both usually of the same contrast, so which seems to work. They both have a size comparison and a weight. I think I said that. But anyway, it is the simplest construction that consistently works, right? But then as you get into, like, if you look through the Wally Wood panels and you look through Scott McCloud's book and the DC and the Marvel books, you'll see that depending on the mood, you want it to be unbalanced or you want it to be incredibly strongly contrasted by light or by color or by weight, because that actually creates the mood that you're trying to get, whether it's either a power move or insecurity or something like that, right? So the composition changes, I guess is what I'm trying to say, based on the mood. And the moods of the human heart are myriad. So we can't go through all of the different ways to give you composition other than to say, start with the text, look at Wally Wood's panels that work, and then read through those other three titles. And I think you will come to find that the more you do it, as Brad says, the better you get at it.
Absolutely. So, Dave, to round out the show this week, I've got one that I think is a lot of fun. This one comes in from $5 Patreon backer Dorian Gray, who says, "You mentioned that the webcomics industry is about 10 years ahead of the podcast industry in terms of business plans, ads and ad blockers moving to crowdfunding." Mm-hmm. That was from an episode a few weeks ago. "Knowing that you guys are always keeping your heads on swivels, which industries do you look to for inspiration on how to better run your business? That could be the video game industry with the free-to-play method, and downloadable content, the movie industry with its marketing. Thanks for the laughs and advice." So, Dave, what industries are you watching right now that can apply information to your own comics business?
I tell you, the big one that I'm watching all the time is Brad Geiger. Can't get enough of that Brad Geiger. Watching it. I don't know where I'm going with that. I will say, okay, so this is a great question, Dorian. And I do actually look to a lot. When I first got started, in fact, I was a big subscriber to about three or four business publications because I was trying to, mostly entrepreneurial-focused business publications, because I was trying to figure out what were they doing that I could apply. You know, it's never a perfect one-to-one, but I was always trying to figure out, like, hey, Zappos seems to be doing shoes really interestingly. What can I learn from Zappos or this or that, right? And so I'll go through a couple different categories of businesses that I look to for advice. And actually, you named one of them, which is video games with their free-to-play and then paid DLC models, which is not that dissimilar for a lot of the things that we do with webcomics, which is, here are my archives for free, but you know what? The book is $40, or the blankety blank collection is such and such amounts of money, which is not that dissimilar from video games in terms of the base idea. But so here's what I look to. For small businesses, when I go to Comic-Cons, I very often look at what small businesses, and by this I mean storefronts, how are they handling their displays? How are they handling their product displays, which are different than their displays, on their shelving, right? How are they making me, as I walk into this little ding-a-ling-a-ling kind of a shop, feel like I want to spend $20 or $30 by the time I leave versus how a Target would do it? Because Target is a very different kind of business, and we all agree to that. But you walk into a small mom-and-pop-owned shop that sells, I don't know, boutique soap or something, right? You can learn a lot on how they do their displays, honestly, in terms of the way they vary shelves by height sizes. They put little boxes to display special items on there. And so the next time I do a Comic-Con, I take what I learned from that boutique soap shop, and I'm not kidding about that, and I apply it to my Comic-Con display, right? Another one that I look to a lot is boutique software companies and boutique gaming companies. And by this, I'm so boutique that I mean like 1 to 10 employees, not a lot of employees, those really boutique software and gaming companies, because it is fun to see how a company who has very few employees, how they handle their PR, how they handle their press, how they handle their online presences, and how they handle even stuff like their HR, because you can learn a lot from a tiny company that's also scrappy and trying to make it, but also trying to strike their own voice in the world. You know, they're not like, we are IBM and we make cloud software, and also we used to make computers, but we sold that part of our business, and but we're IBM, right? Like, but compare that to, I don't know, a maker of small boutique all steel keychains, right? You follow that company online, you know that they have a unique voice because it's one woman writing the voice. And she's like, I'm having fun doing this. You know, my boss said have fun, so I'm going to have fun. And so I learn a lot from that. I learn a lot from online pop culture stores that appeal to geeks. I'm trying to think of the, I'm blanking on them at the moment. But just think of any pop culture store online
like
that sells.
Like the t-shirt stores like Think Geek.
Think Geek is a great one. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for helping out Grandpa as he had a stroke. That was nice of you. Because I genuinely blanked. I couldn't think of one. But you know, any of the stores that sell to geeks, they always seem to be like, hey, do you like Picard? Do you want a bathrobe that makes you look like Picard stepping out of the shower? Well, we here at this company will happily sell you that bathrobe. So I look to them
Engage.
Wear this bathrobe and you won't be engaged.
All right,
here we go. So I also look towards small music bands that are cultivating their fan base online. There's a lot you can learn from a small up-and-coming band in terms of how ones that are not necessarily associated with a music label. Brad, you're smiling at a lot of these. I feel like you don't like any of these suggestions, but that's fine.
No, I like, I'm really enjoying your word usage. I've heard the word boutique about 12 times and I'm not tired of it yet. And a small music band to me is a band that plays small music. So it's like they play three notes and they're done.
You know what? Well, instead of saying boutique, I could use a word like bespoke, but that's even more annoying. Bespoke is such a piece of shit
niche.
Word. Like,
you can see niche is another one.
Niche is
but
good.
No, but you're by the way, let's not confuse. You're making really good points. You're making excellent points that I agree with.
Now, here's the thing. Brad may not necessarily say he's watching these, but I know Brad, and whenever he sees a company of one of these categories that does something that piques his interest, he emails me or texts me or calls me and goes, hey, did you see what so-and-so is doing? How can we make that work for us? So I know that he's keeping his head on a swivel for a lot of these.
Oh, yeah.
So even though he's making fun of my use of boutique, which is a valid word, you used adjective, I get to use boutique.
Well, listen, at the top of this, in all seriousness, you said that you were watching me, right? And I've got to say, without a pause, the first thing I've got to put on my list is there's somebody that I'm watching too when it comes to this, and it's Scott Kurtz. But you know,
I will murder you where you stand. I will murder you. I do not enjoy this line of joking anymore.
Oh, I've been waiting. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting to use that joke. Everything that Dave said, I co-sign 100%. And of course, yes, I'm watching Dave Kellett very closely. But everything that you said, I agree with. The only thing, in fact, you've done kind of a thorough job. My participation in this conversation is just be the guy to come in and tell you, now that you've heard all that, there's one pitfall I want to warn you of, because as you're doing all of that, as you're saying, oh, look at this t-shirt shop doing this thing, I'm going to try and do that. Or take a look at what DC Comics is doing with distributing or this new publishing outreach. I'm going to do that, blah, blah. The problem that it is you've got to take a step back. Once you do recognize somebody that's doing something that works, Mm-hmm. Your next step is not to try to emulate that right away, because that leads to cargo cult mentality, right? You're emulating the actions, but you don't understand the why behind the what.
Can you describe what cargo culting is for those that don't know cargo culting?
Yeah. So cargo culting is when you try to, you see somebody that's successful, all right? Mm-hmm. And you try to mimic what they're doing without understanding why they're doing it. So you see the great example is in pricing a book, by the way. You see DC Comics is very, very successful selling graphic novels, and their graphic novels are, I haven't bought one for a long time, but we'll just say they're $10.
Right.
And then you cargo cult that $10, put that on the price of your book. The problem is DC Comics is running a completely different business than you are. They're printing in the tens of thousands. Okay. So their unit price is very low, so they can price that book at $10. Mm-hmm. You have a completely different publishing. Your publishing, your unit price might be higher. You've got nothing in common with DC or its distribution or its printing. And so if you base your price on what DC Comics prices a graphic novel, you're going to make a cargo cult mistake because you didn't understand the why behind the what. The price is based on unit cost. Yeah.
That was a great example.
So what I'm going to tell you is, yes, you should do all of these things that Dave just talked about. You should absolutely be looking at all these success stories, but then take the extra time to understand why those are successful for them, because there's an awful lot of them that are successful over there that aren't necessarily going to be successful over here.
Right. Right. And that's one of the things why, I will be honest, one of the reasons why when I see a company with an idea that sparks for me, I text Brad, or when Brad has an idea that that sparks with him, he texts me, because what we're doing is we're saying, we don't want to cargo cult this. We don't want to assume that this is a one-to-one conversion of their business to our business. So, hey, see that Zappos is offering this kind of offer. Could we make this work within our webcomic business model? Maybe. Let's try to game this out. And so we'll talk over 10 minutes how to do this or that modification to the Zappos, I don't know, promotional system. And then we'll see if it can be made to work for webcomics. But it's not always, the idea here, Dave, is that it's not that you're going, hey, it worked for Apple, I'll make it work for me. It's saying, hey, I see what Apple did and I see the reasons why they did this promo. How could I take the essence of that and translate that to how, what I do on an infinitesimally smaller scale with Sheldon and Drive, so that I could make the idea, the kernel of the idea, work for me in a different iteration. Right, Brad? It's not saying I can just take it and slap it on my business. It's saying what kernel of the idea, what concept could I take that and then iterate on so that I could make it work for me?
Yeah. Yeah. I co-signed that 100%. And truthfully, that's a lot of our personal conversations on the phone is, you know, help me tear this idea apart so that we can rebuild it. And we've done that 100 different times and a lot of times just realize that once we tore it down for parts, there's nothing here that we can use.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And so in those cases, we mentally note it. We go, well, good for that company that they figured out a way to make it work for them. It doesn't work for our distribution model, or it doesn't work for our cost structure, or it doesn't work for the size of our audience. And so we kind of say, hey, good for them. Go with God. It doesn't work for us. But that's kind of, Dave, what you have to do is you're keeping your eye on a swivel. You're learning from them, but you're not necessarily taking it, as Brad said, as a one-to-one conversion. And I think that's a really good note to make on that one, Brad.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, I've got a note to make, and it is this. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my friend Brad Geiger, or at least I used to call him my friend. I think he's mostly Scott's friend these days. He's the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good close friend, the good-natured Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped.
Really? Really? You're going to try to play this game now? Good, close, personal friend.
The wonderful, forgiving Dave Kellett, co-director of Strip, and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from the very talented Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited, as all episodes are, by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode. Meanwhile, if you would like to watch us record this show live starting in June, you can jump over to Patreon. It's going to be the $10 tier, and I will guarantee you'll have a good time, because I'm looking at the live chat right now. These people, like, look, thanks, guys. I've enjoyed it. From Harold. Oxford says, been nice listening to this. Susan says, you looked way less crabby than I thought you might be.
Well, good points up. You know what? Susan is speaking her truth, and that's okay. What? That is okay,
Brad. Why do you assume she's talking about me? I thought she was talking about you.
Oh, God. So I'm going to say this, but Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So go ahead and join us over at the $10 level for Comic Lab Live Gab, patreon.com/comiclab.
Well, listen, there's one more thing that we've got to talk about, Scott, and it's this. Here on Comic Lab,
now you're doing the thing where you're screaming out someone's name during sex. It's not Scott. It's not Scott. You're on Comic Lab podcast, the podcast you've done for 3 years now, 4 years now.
Yes, I
No. No, you don't get to do that to me.
I'm sorry. But I was thinking about you the whole time.
And just like your sex life, it ends with apologies. That's good.